Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It's Tuesday, April 2nd. April Fool's Day is over, so we have no crazy jokes for you today. My name is Magnus Teeble. With me today is...
Peter R.H. like to go by sometimes.
We got a good show for you today. Peter is going to be talking about the...
Well, the banking holiday of 1933. This sort of coincides when I was talking about the all-seeing eye that Franklin Roosevelt said to put on the American $1 bill in 1935. So I'm going to talk about the draconian measures that happened in 1933, perhaps. What's the thinking behind that symbol? Mm-hmm. So, which the symbol, as I said earlier in earlier shows, was from the 18th century. The very imagery is.
Yeah. We're also going to talk a bit about climate change and the climate and the carbon tax, because it's causing a lot of political heat these days. And in the second half hour, we have part two of our sort of occasional and ongoing series on First Nation languages. So that'll be coming up at around 10:30 or so. First off, though, we have this segment from Climate Connections.
Oh, no, Internet.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Setting clean energy goals, pledging to plant billions of trees, mandating energy efficiency improvements. Lots of policies can reduce global warming, and it can be hard to know which are the most effective. So Climate Interactive and the MIT Sloan Sustainability Initiative created a free online simulation tool called En-ROADS.
To help people understand what policies are available and what kind of impact that they will have in terms of achieving desired climate goals.
Michael Overend, a volunteer with the nonprofit Citizens Climate Lobby, leads community workshops using En-ROADS. Users choose from a menu of climate policies, such as charging carbon polluters a fee or subsidizing EV purchases, and they can tweak variables like the amount charged on a ton of carbon. The tool provides instant feedback on how those policies would affect global temperature, sea level rise, and other outcomes if they were implemented worldwide.
It can be used to spark discussion among our leadership. It can be used to help educate community members.
And inform action on the path toward a safer future. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
And climate policy has been in the news a lot lately across Canada. The opposition party, particularly not all the opposition parties, but the Conservative Party has been making a lot of political think out of it, particularly Pierre Poilievre, and calling for an axe the tax.
Yes. And, oh, I was just saying, I know some people that were maybe involved into Watson. I think they had a car rally.
Yeah.
And there was a car rally going from Chilliwack to Hope. And someone phoned me this morning.
Protesting the tax?
Yes. Yeah. So someone phoned me this morning and said they thought they saw some RCMP helicopter overlooking them or something. Well, here's one thing I'd like to maybe bring up, is that during World War II, mm-hmm. they had rationing of gasoline.
Right.
So how they did it, they didn't like raise the price of it. What they had was you had to have these coupons.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had all the money in the world and you didn't have the coupons to buy the gasoline,
yeah,
then you couldn't buy it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it also went to meat and so on, a few right. other things. So, I mean, I'm just saying that there has been things in the past that's been different than just having a direct tax.
Yeah. Well, the carbon tax or the carbon price that's been implemented by the federal government in Canada in most jurisdictions, some jurisdictions like here in BC and in Quebec and the Northwest Territories that have their own carbon pricing schemes in place are not part of the federal system, and any province that wants to opt out of the federal system can do so by creating their own local, provincially based carbon pricing system. And the price on carbon went up just yesterday. It goes up annually a certain amount, and this increase in the carbon tax has been latched onto by particularly the Conservative Party and the leader of the Conservative Party, Pierre Poilievre, as well as other elements, a number of provincial premiers, those not having their own policy in place, have been voicing their opposition. But it's been a super frustrating discussion because, of course, most of what there's a great deal of disinformation in the opposition arguments to the climate pricing. Most particularly, they really ignore the fact that while you will pay a little more for your energy, you will get that money back. 80% of Canadians will get that money back through rebates that are calculated based on provincial circumstances. So almost everybody, 80% of people, will get back about the same or more than they're paying in the carbon tax or the carbon price. And as that carbon price goes up, so does the rebate to balance it off. The whole point of the carbon tax is not to raise revenue, but to influence behavior and ultimately over time discourage and lead to the reduction in fossil fuel use.
Well, that's not how Rebel News sees it.
No, and that's the problem. You know, like I say, there's a lot of disinformation.
The argument is, and I have never learned how to drive a car, mm-hmm. by the way. So yeah. There you go. The argument is that this is basically is a cash grab. It's not an honest. And I think that in many cases, for some people, businesses, they're not going to get as much back as they're going to have to put forth.
No, and that will be true in some cases where people are high users of energy.
Right? What?
And, you know, there's a consumer tax and there is an industrial or a commercial tax. And, well, I don't know the details. The commercial tax is sort of more complicated because it does involve some balancing out of industries that can't escape carbon use.
Well,
but ultimately, the point is to change behavior, and it's structured in a way that the money raised is returned to users.
But here's the other thing: is that it could cause inflation in certain goods because they're paying more for it. So, I mean, these businesses that are dependent on it will be forced to raise their prices. In theory,
I heard a figure that, you know, the component of inflation that is the result of the carbon tax represents 1/20 of the inflation that's happening.
Yeah, I guess. Well,
so you know, I mean, yes, any kind of tax or any kind of thing, any kind of effect that will lead to increased prices, which an add-on tax will make a difference to inflation. But I think, you know, a lot of the discussion and a lot of the arguments put forth by opposition really overplay that element. Like I say, I mean, a study that I heard about was that it will be 1/20 of the amount of inflation happening right now? Because there's so many other factors in inflation beyond just this one part.
Well, okay, but also look at certain people, like a person, truckers, which have been, actually, it's a factor been for a number of years, supposedly, it's not been so great to be a trucker. I mean, sometimes they say you're putting more in than you're taking in. Mm-hmm. You're putting more out.
Yeah.
And so maybe the majority of the population, that could be true, but for certain people like truckers and so on who already have kind of trouble now, or farmers or whatever, it could well be valid complaints about this.
And there will be that, but also, you know, the whole point of the policy is to discourage and lead to the reduction in fossil fuel usage. So the fact that it somewhat more heavily affects fossil fuel intensive industries is kind of the point. You know, maybe it creates a shift towards, you know, in certain circumstances from shipping your goods by trucking to shipping your goods by rail, which is a more fuel efficient way of doing it, certainly and particularly for, you know, long distance travel.
Well, I think avocados from California, I don't know the exact what's faster, trucks or rail. I know that it's a boat. Boat is actually shipping is actually cheaper, but it's slow.
Yeah,
and I think for a lot of the agricultural things, avocados, et cetera, from California, maybe trucking is just the way you do it.
Mm-hmm. But like I say, you know, the point of a tax like this or a carbon pricing scheme like this is to influence behavior. So if it influences a shift from a carbon intensive methods of transportation to more efficient methods, that's kind of the point. So yes, you know, some of those people may be negatively affected, but that's kind of the point of the tax.
Mm.
It's just, you know.
Well, the other thing is that for the critics of things like this, they bring up, you say carbon, which is an element on the periodic table, you're really saying CO2.
Yeah.
CO2 omission. And there's actually another one, because there's something called the 8-fit in chemistry, right?
Yeah.
Like H2O is like you got the 2 hydrogen, they're 1-1, and 6 is oxygen. And CO2 goes with the 8-fit. But there's another kind of binding, which is kind of more complicated, which is CO,
right.
I think, which can kill you, I guess, in a garage.
Yeah.
If your
carbon
in-law,
monoxide.
If your in-law does. But it's actually some other kind of a fit. But so what all this is about is the omission of CO2.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something to be said that always calling it carbon. I mean, it's carbon's going to be there no matter what happens. Anyway, so that's just my little 2 cents. 5 cents for a Canadian. We can't do only 2 cents now.
So, yeah, there's a lot of discussion on this, and it just feels like, given the level of disinformation that's being employed on the topic, and when it comes to someone like Pierre Poilievre, who even, you know, it goes beyond just mere disinformation to outright lies.
Hmm. Well, maybe.
Yeah,
not.
Well, you know, I mean, all the study, you know, the way the tax is set up and the study shows that 80% of Canadians will get the same or amount a greater amount of money back through the rebates than they will pay in the tax. He's saying the opposite, explicitly the opposite.
Well, he is for minority rights. There's that 20% there, so we got to be for, understand the minority. Or
yeah.
No, but actually, to be more serious, I mean, there are, I think, certain factors of people that it will be arguably hit by.
Mm-hmm. And that's true.
Okay.
One of the things, too, is that, you know, if people don't like, and I don't mean individuals, but, you know, but if people don't like carbon pricing as a policy to try and reduce greenhouse gases,
CO2. Yeah. No, we got more
then
than
that. I really, you know, people should offer something different. You know, all the provinces and all the premiers, the ones who are speaking out, trying to make political hay off this issue, have the ability under the current rules to create their own carbon reduction or CO2 reduction schemes.
You're talking about the actual provinces.
Yeah.
Okay. Not so much Pierre Poilievre, because he's federal. He wants.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, the provinces are also, some provinces are also speaking about it, and they do have the ability. You know, if they don't like this policy, they can create their own policy that they feel works better. But they're not saying that, and you know, they can get out of this current policy by creating their own. And the idea that we can do nothing about this issue isn't an option. I mean, climate change is real; it's going to happen, and if we do nothing, the consequences are going to be immense.
Well, I noticed that you're kind of, this is what the critiques of all of this sort of say. You sort of went from just CO2 to greenhouse, like you're including other things in this now.
Well, I mean, I suppose there are a variety of greenhouse gases. CO2 is one of the biggest ones. Methane is another one.
Methane, what the chemical compound is that? Carbon something, or
it is carbon. It's similar. I don't know exactly. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, but it's a longer chain molecule.
Oh, okay.
With carbon and I think hydrogen and oxygen atoms.
You're not talking about CO.
No.
Okay.
No. And, you know, CO2 is one carbon, two oxygen atoms.
Yeah.
Methane and some of the other ones, similar kinds of, are, it's a longer chain molecule.
Yeah, okay.
Just like, you know, most of the fuel molecules, you know, whether it's gasoline or whatever, gasoline is actually a mixture of various components, are long chain carbon molecules that, when they're burned, they break, the molecules break apart, releases energy, and one of the byproducts there is.
That's why it's called BC hydro, because it's the hydro, it's actually the hydrogen. And petroleum is that the carbon traps the hydrogen in. There was somebody from some group, he wanted to run his car on water. And he was slightly successful, but he exploded all these kind of this glass jars or something.
Yeah. Well, BC Hydro is called BC Hydro because it
the hydroelectric.
Mostly water. Yeah, water power. If you're concerned about the carbon tax, I encourage you to actually do some real reading on it, find out more about it. And if you really still hate it, try and figure out some alternatives and talk to your MP or your MLA and whoever. I mean, here in BC, we have our own carbon tax that seems to be working really well, so we're a little outside the issue. But I think the biggest problem is the... I think mainly dishonest conversation around the topic. Okay, well, let's finish it up because we need to leave time for your thing.
Yeah.
So we're going to go quickly to a bird note here, and we'll be back with Peter. And
The Banking Act of 1933. No.
This is Bird Note. In spring, around low marshy spots in open country, listen for this sound coming from somewhere up in the sky. It's the winnowing sound of the Wilson's snipe. Look up and you may see the bird itself. The snipe, a brown, heavily striped sandpiper with a very long bill, lives in marshes and muddy areas where it probes for worms and other squirmy delights. But when spring comes, it takes to the air. The male snipe circles high above in a series of roller coaster arcs, each descent marked by this loud and distinctive sound. His rapidly beating wings force air through his widespread outer tail feathers, which are narrow and stiff. The resulting tremolo seems more than could come from a couple of tail feathers. Each burst of sound has a Doppler effect, like the whistle of a passing train. Snipes also sing from the ground. In this case, a song like that of many other birds in the spring. But it is the winnowing that captures our attention. A twitter-pated sandpiper making music with two wings and a tail. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
All right, Peter. The Banking Act of 1933. They shut down the banks.
For a whole week. In fact, it came pretty... In those days, he was inaugurated.
So this is Franklin Roosevelt.
Franklin Roosevelt in the
U.S.
March 8th, because it used to be later, but they changed it immediately after that into January, right?
Yeah,
because they said, well, you do kind of wait a while for a new president once it's elected, but. One thing that was interesting, he actually worked it was inaugurated on a Saturday, and they worked on a Sunday, but they didn't take a break. Mm-hmm. And the banking holiday was for a whole week, right after it. And then he had...
And just when we talk about a banking holiday, they sort of enforced the shutdown of all banks across the entire United States for an entire week. You couldn't go to the bank and take out money. You couldn't. I'm sure certain things could still happen, but
It was pretty draconian, actually. Mm-hmm. I think. And then he had the first of the maybe it's not famous nowadays, but the fireside chats.
Yeah.
And that's on the thing, you have a radio and you have the fireplace, you're looking at the fire. And they were kind of short, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And he that was sort of the first time, because first radio station was 1920. However, radio doesn't start getting going until 1929.
Yeah.
So he's really the first president to make use of radio. And he had a 15-minute thing on Sunday evening. And it supposedly worked because he restored people's confidence or to the acceptance of what was going on.
Yep.
And so here in Wikipedia, they say what the public reaction was. Much to everyone's relief, when the institutions reopened for business on March 13th, Monday, 1933, depositors stood in line to return their stashed, cashed neighborhood banks. Within 2 weeks, Americans had redeposited more than half the currency that they had squirreled away before the bank suspension. So he's restoring confidence or saying you have to be patriotic and restore the...
One of the big fears was that with the loss of confidence in the banking system and banks, people would just take all their money out.
Yes. Well, that was sort of a few weeks earlier, talking about the panic in 1907, where it was actually some advisors at J.P. Morgan said, buy U.S. Steel, which was against the antitrust regulations that had Theodore Roosevelt had put in. But that was the idea of confidence. And this one was sort of more using media, in the case of radio, to sort of instill confidence. And on top of this, the possession of gold on April 5th, 1933, unless it was in your teeth or a wedding ring, was illegal. And it was illegal in the United States until 1974. Which was actually interesting enough, 3 years after the United States went off the gold standard.
Right.
So that was, I don't think any other society in the world made gold illegal.
And the gold standard, for those who maybe have heard that term but don't totally know what it means, was that basically the gold possessions that the United States had were used to back up the currency. In theory, you could... Well, you couldn't because you weren't allowed to own it, but a dollar or $10 represented a fixed amount of gold.
Yes.
And that's why the paper money had value, that you should trust it because it represented this real gold resource.
Which it actually did continue to supposedly represent, even though you could not own it.
Yeah, exactly. And then in whatever it was, late 60s, they went off the gold standard.
1971, to be exact.
Okay.
I can't get the exact day of 1971, but we've been on fiat money. The reason they say that happened was that there were a lot of creditors like France and so on, and they wanted, you know, payment in something akin to gold. And then the Richard Nixon administration, because, you know, sometimes this thinking comes from other people who know, I don't know how much Richard Nixon knew economics, but they said, well, if we go off the gold standard, then we can pay them off. But it doesn't mean that we're paying them gold, as it were.
Yeah.
So actually, them doing that in 1971, sort of, some people think that wreaked havoc with the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, because you got the floating in interest rates going and so. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing I'm going to say about, if you ever see an old movie like a duck soup from 1933,
yeah.
It begins with NRA. It does not stand for National Rifle Association. It stands for
National Recovery Act.
And they put that on magazines and pulps like The Shadow. And a lot of these movies are stuck with them even now, like Duck Soup with the Marx Brothers. They're stuck with this NRA. People think it's the Rifle Association.
Well, the other thing I was going to mention, of course, as long as the United States was on the gold standard, they had maintained these enormous gold reserves at a place called Fort Knox.
Yeah, there's a lot of theories about that one.
Yeah. And, you know, it was funny because Fort Knox used to loom pretty large in the culture because it was this place where there was all this gold,
right.
You know, and it would show up in cartoons and it would show up in
James movies. Well, James Bond, 1964 Goldfinger. He's trying to rob gold, Fort Knox and Goldfinger.
And of course, you know, now that the gold standard is 50 years in the rear mirror, it's very much it doesn't play the same role. You don't really hear as much about it as you used to.
I'm going to say a bit about gold before we're through with this. That for the element gold to be created, a star has to collapse. So the meteors have brought this. Because now lead is a heavier element, but for some reason that's easier to create. We can create it here.
Yeah.
Plenty of lead. But a star has to collapse.
And interesting.
Some of the gold is too expensive to get at.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just lying there. But if you put all the gold that we can get at, it would be a cube under the Eiffel Tower, supposedly. Right, that's how much there is gold that's gotten out of the ground and so on in the whole world.
So really not that much.
There's not that much. That's why it's valuable. And anyway.
Yeah. and one of the particular qualities of gold, unlike many other metals, is it doesn't tarnish.
I did not know.
Yeah,
that.
It's unlike, say, silver, which tarnishes, it will turn black, and then you got to polish it again because it oxidizes.
Oxidization.
You know, same thing that rust is oxidization in almost all other metals.
But copper has a good oxidization. It's blue-green, the roof of the Hotel Vancouver.
Yeah, but gold doesn't oxidize. It will always remain shiny because it's non-reactive.
Oh, well,
with pretty much everything. And there's a whole chemical, scientific reason for that having to do with all the spots on the outside of the molecule being filled up.
Okay.
That's a very two-bit explanation of the science behind it. It's all filled up.
It's all filled up. Anyway.
Okay, we are almost out of time here for this segment of the show. It's going to be some nice weather this week here in B.C., sunny with clouds and whatnot, and that's it. Next up is our series on First Nations languages. This is about the Haudenosaunee language, and part two. Hope you enjoy.